you're watching Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. With me is Sharad Kutan. Melissa, Malaysia and Singapore have mutually agreed to open respective borders to long-term pass holders as well as business and official visitors starting the 10th of August. Now, the causeway is one of the world's busiest border crossings, across which some 250,000 people used to traverse each day. Joining us on the show now to discuss the reopening of this border, we have Oh Isan, fellow at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs. Good evening, Isan. Welcome to the show. Just to set the scene, can you talk to us a little bit about how disruptive the closure of this border has been for all stakeholders, including Malaysian workers and Singaporean employers?
Well, as we all know, Singapore's obtained a lot of its, for example, fresh producers, as well as other perishable goods from Malaysia or to Malaysia. And a lot of Malaysians, crossing the causeway to work in Singapore and coming back on a daily basis. So when the coronavirus pandemic hit in a big way and both countries essentially closed down their borders for extended periods of time, of course, number one, the Malaysian workers' livelihood would be in trouble. Their Singaporean employers would be hard put to obtain the human resources to fill up their places. And then, of course, the various vital supplies in Singapore, even though there are various measures to ensure that most of these supplies would still go into Singapore, sometimes like the drivers would not disembark from the lorries and so on. But, of course, all these arrangements would have been much easier if we sort of at least partially open up the borders now that the pandemic has to a large extent dissipated, even though not gone away yet.
Isan, a couple of months ago on this show, we talked to people in the F&B sector in Singapore and talked about the impact of the closure. Can you tell us a little more about where Malaysians are? We were talking about specifically Malaysian workers are in Singapore's economy and to what extent Singaporean businesses are, in fact, located in Iskandar or in Johor.
Well, for example, you mentioned the F&B business in Singapore. I have patronized some of these restaurants and so on in Singapore. And, well, sometimes the Malaysian workers there would have to rush back to Malaysia after after their shift and so on. So that would be impossible right now because of the closure of the borders. By similar tokens, there are Malaysian workers on shift duties in Singapore's shipyards, in Singapore's Jurong factories, and so on. Well, the number one is their job. The number two is also Singapore's economic well-being. That's why both countries and our people are very anxious to have the borders reopen again.
Okay. So, on that note of Singapore wanting to make sure that it's got economic viability, the supply chains are not affected, how has Singapore approached the opening up of borders? Because if I understand it, Singapore and China have had a fast lane for business and official travel between the two countries back in June. So how is Singapore approaching opening up its borders again?
Well, I think Singapore and a number of other countries are adopting this so-called green bubbles concept when there is, for example, a significant, usually municipal region in another country which is more or less, quote-unquote, clear of the coronavirus, then there will be fast lane arrangement between, for example, in this case, Singapore and that municipal region or areas. In this case, I think quite a few of them in China. Mm. So, of course, something like that could be contemplated between, say, Singapore and Johor Bahru if both governments feel that it is, as the Foreign Minister of Singapore, Vivian Balakrishnan, say, safe to do so for both Singaporeans and Malaysians. Yeah.
Isan, I mean, the question of how do you measure in this bilateral discussion, obviously not transparent to the public, but in these bilateral discussions, two countries with perhaps different strategies dealing with the pandemic, how do you measure? Because we have perhaps more testing in Singapore than you have in Malaysia. And how do you compare the death rates? How do we, how does each side reassure themselves and the other that they are on equal par, that this is a safe thing to do?
Well, I think both governments, both authorities, both countries are doing their best to try to contain the spread of the virus in their respective jurisdiction. Going by what went on over the last, let's say, 3 or 4 months, I think there's a lot of actually mutual trust between Singapore and Malaysia. We have not traded a single, unkind words about you are doing worse than us or I'm doing better than you and so on. In fact, I think there are a lot of exchanges of best practices and lessons between the medical communities of both countries.
Right.
So this level of profound trust, as well as the general friendliness between the two governments, as well as, and I have to emphasize here, the eagerness of both the people and the business communities of both countries to have even just a limited amount of exchanges, I think we're all calling for borders to be at least slightly open. Yeah.
So can I touch on that for a little bit? You talked a little bit earlier about this as being a partial opening. You know, it could just be a limited amount of crossings, of cross-border travel, limited to certain businesses and official travel only. What does that mean for the economic dislocation of many Malaysian workers who have not been, who chose to remain in Malaysia, have not been allowed back into Singapore? I'm wondering what this would mean for the daily cross-border commute for those living in Johor, working in Singapore.
Well, if I learned about what has been disclosed so far, it would appear that, for example, Malaysian workers in Singapore, they'll be able to, after undergoing some tests, enter Singapore and, for example, remain there for, let's say, 3 months, come back to Malaysia for, like family visit for a short period of time, and then after testing, going back to Singapore again. I'm sure a similar arrangement is being made in the opposite direction as well. But you can see with, as I saw from various footages of the Malaysian and Singaporean foreign ministers who are about, the same age and political experience, walking side by side, it appears that it's a very friendly and working relationship between the two governments to try to better the economy amidst this pandemic here.
Isan, very quickly, does this whole pandemic and perhaps if we don't get a vaccine anytime soon, does it disrupt the whole growth triangle area, the idea of Singapore, Johor and Batam? I mean, long-standing growth triangle. Will it pull the rug from under this kind of economic planning for the future?
Well, the pandemic is pulling the rug from underneath almost everything else. You see a negative growth being forecast in both Malaysia and Singapore, for example. So I think, number one, both countries have to resume gingerly their commercial links, after the pandemic. And then, we will involve Indonesia, or at least that part of Indonesia, whom we consider green bubbles and so on, and gradually build up our economy, Singapore, Malaysia, and, the green part of Indonesia, at least. Yeah.
Isan, it's always a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight. We're going to take a quick break. In just a few minutes, we'll continue this conversation. Stay tuned to Consider This.